This is The Topic is Trek, episode 65 for Friday, May 1st, 2020. Coming up in this episode, more Picard news. No, really, more Picard news. DC's Legends go boldly. We boast that we went to Roropente before it was cool, although I think it was always cool. All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. You got your TNG in my TOS. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting, jam-packed, it's full of jam, I guess, episode of The Topic is Trek. I am, of course, one of your co-hosts, Clinton, and joining me, we have some regular people and an irregular person as well. So let's get to that. First of all, the introductions. We have Mr. Craig Stepp.
Make a lick a la high, make a honey ho.
What he said. And then we have Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Tonight, you can call me Doc Holliday.
I'll be your huckleberry.
just don't call him late for dinner.
He introduced himself as Clanton, right?
Clanton.
Oh, what?
Clinton.
Yes.
Darn it.
My goodness. After, I'm new to the show, so sorry. And
go ahead.
Beaming in from parts unknown, Mr. Gary Lindros.
Hey, everybody. You know, I'm getting confused. I don't know what communicator to use anymore. There's so many anymore.
Just pick anyone. I like the ones with the moray patterns because they remind me of the Green Hornet at the same time. So you get that nice crossover effect going.
Tonight's communicator really cool. Is called Skype.
Skippy.
What? Not Zoom? Oh, my goodness. But we are all here to talk about one thing, and of course that is...
Star
checking
Wars?
My notes here. Wait a minute. That's not it.
Man-eating chicken?
Marvel?
Superman.
Trek. Right. Because the topic is Trek. There we go. Excellent. And as always, we are going to start off with subspace chatter. Let's get Charlie to tell us. You ready? You excited for this? Come on.
Maybe he took his meds this week.
You don't hear all that subspace chatter?
Nope. Man. Every single time. He does it every single time.
Predictable. I really do think.
Yeah. Universal I do think that one time really emboldened him, you know, that he was correct on it. All right. Well, let's start with our first story, because if we started with the second story, that would be the first story. One of the lingering... You learn things on this show.
Yeah.
Ow.
One of the lingering questions from season one of Star Trek Picard involves the fate of the ex-Borgs, or the ex-Bees, who crash-landed on Coppelius, the homeworld of the Synths. Recently, executive producer and season one showrunner Michael Chabon shared some answers to this loose thread, explaining, he stated, "We shot a scene intended to show Ramda and the other XBs beginning to form a kind of possible community with the synths under the auspices of Sung," Chabon said. What could go wrong with that? "In the end, we couldn't find a place for it that it worked, and we felt that tossing it out didn't hurt much. Maybe we were wrong." And I think the answer is yes. Yes, you were wrong on this one. It's one of the things that we cited as a loose end with Star Trek Picard, and something that we have a feeling that we're not going to get back to.
Nope.
I just don't see us heading back to that planet. That was that's so season one. We're not going back there anytime soon.
You just left the cube sitting there on the beach having a Borg beach party.
Yeah.
Well, I was later on, I thought, you know, there's got to be other people on the, not just the XBs, but other people on the Borg cube, you know, that were just not happen to be on. It's too big not to have something on it, right?
Well, that's true, because there were researchers there from other places, right? That's why you had members of the Federation there. That's a good question. Are there other non-assimilar or post-assimilated Borg on the cube?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but what are the odds we'll actually see any more Borg in the next season, really? I just can't see it happening.
I can't see it. Well, we had that discussion last time around that essentially now Picard is either totally Borg-free or totally Borg, you know, one or the other, because I mean, he's all machine. So what's the difference at this point?
I'm a little Borged out now. I want to move on to something else, another part of the story for Picard.
All right. Well, let's move on to something completely different for Craig. More news about Picard.
Yes. So Squire of Gothos. I don't know. In more Star Trek Picard news, because there's always more Star Trek Picard news. LeVar Burton is pretty much confirming that Geordi LaForge will show up on the Patrick Stewart lead CBS All Access series.
Yes. Good.
In a recent interview, that means he survived the attack on Mars.
Yes.
Oh, wait.
Spoiler.
Jeez, there goes my 5 credits.
So much for my qualus. All right. Entertainment Tonight, Burton said, I think it's reasonable to assume that those people are part of Picard's life. Well, what the hell? Absolutely. You'll see us all. Burton went on to say that negotiations for his return are still underway, in terms of dollars, and that nothing has yet been filmed.
Yeah, I was very intrigued by the fact this at all, and whether he was joking or not. I mean, well, really, we've already seen three. Well, right?
We named everybody last year who we speculated was coming, so we all win.
That's right.
Dwight Schultz, he's in.
you get to be on, but when is our turn is what I want to know. So that's great. LeVar is going to be on. That makes sense. But what about us?
I'm not getting upset until I see Mark B. Lee on the show.
I wouldn't
you
doubt.
Say that, but you never know.
you know, I, this guy is down on his luck. I say, sure, you can announce for my show, you know, and then he suddenly has a rebound and nothing. I don't hear from the guy. I don't get it at all. I don't know. All right. Well, you know what? Just out of spite, we're going to move on from Star Trek Picard and talk about something else. Tell us about it, Craig.
Yeah, this caught my attention the other day as well. So when the CW's Legends of Tomorrow returns, Trek fans will notice something a bit familiar about it. A teaser trailer from the spring return of the show opens with the Legends character Sarah Lance doing a Shatner-esque, I'm laughing because I saw it, monologue over a moving Starfield. That's right. Legends is going full Star Trek, or in this case, Star Trip, in one of their upcoming episodes. The look is definitely classic TOS Trek, but we think the aliens have a more of a TNG vibe. You can check out the full trailer by going to the show notes for episode 65 over at thetopicistrek.com. Thank you. And it's a lot. There's actually a lot to the trailer for the season, not just the Star Trek part, but that was a pretty startling part of it. I'm ready to see it.
So it seems like the episode that this will be involved with is one, because they make reference to being trapped on, I think, cable television. Mm-hmm. And we see like a shot of somebody being Mr. Rogers. And then there's another part that I think might not be from the same episode. There's one that's a Delta House episode.
Double secret probation.
Yes, exactly. So I've got a feel. I just have this feeling that either that's the plot of this season of these several episodes, or it's going to be one of those ones where they jump from genre to genre over the course of the episode. I mean, it seemed like a rather elaborate set to be used for just three shots or something like that. Because the bridge is, you talk about the size of the bridge on Discovery, or I mean, this is like the size of a sound stage. There's a massive amounts of space between the two chairs up front and the consoles are like a roomer at the back of the bridge someplace.
Yeah, well, actually their bridge looks like a pretty big set to begin with. Actually, I think it looks about the size of Discovery, you know, the Wave Rider. So, but they do have it dressed up to look like Star Trek-esque.
And of course, the uniforms look very, very reminiscent. I think the only difference is they've got a different kind of patch.
Don't put on the red shirt.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember. I don't remember if there were red shirts in the shot. I mean, we had. I remember seeing gold and blue, but you know, of course, maybe the red shirts are not to be seen anymore. They've been vaporized one way or another.
Good. They listen to our show.
Excellent. Excellent.
So Gary, well, I know you're a DC fan. You've been watching Legends.
Yeah, I have. I've really felt they've jumped the shark in the last season or so, but to say would be a guilty pleasure is still giving it too much credit, but it is enjoyable nonetheless.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just, you know, they've just thrown everything out and they're just running with it. I imagine they're having a ball, and so far it's been fun to watch. You can't take it seriously. It's obviously severely diverged from any attempt at the Arrowverse that existed before.
Right.
And it's definitely in its own little sort of pocket, which is fine. I'm not expecting any more super duper crossovers anytime in the next season or so. So hey, go for it. I am missing the turnaround in cast. They've swapped several main cast members out over this season. And so it's a little hard for me touching base with some of the newer people that I don't quite relate to as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never got a chance I didn't really get into Legends that much. I think that aspect of it was so out of sync with the rest of the Arrowverse that it was kind of hard for me to get into the groove of that thing.
Yeah, and I mean, even they didn't take it serious. Oh, geez, is it that time of year for another crossover again?
Yeah, they literally said that.
So, they definitely don't take it serious.
Yeah, I find it, I refer to it like as chaotic fun. I mean, it's, you know, it's not, like you said, it's its own thing, so it's just kind of fun.
So we can't give you a date of this particular episode of it because this was just a teaser trailer for. Now, is it the season or is it the return for a second half of a season? I don't know whether Legend has a full season or a half season.
I think this is a second half of their season.
Okay. So you'll have to, you know, if we happen to get advance word about when that one's coming up, we'll let people know. But sometime in the spring will be this particular episode of the show. All right, we're going to travel from the Wave Rider to a place where you can ride waves for the beginning of our next story. How do you like that? Was that smooth? That was smooth. I like that one. Smooth.
Oh, yeah. Surf San Diego, man.
Anyway, yeah.
Which is where we're headed to. We're talking about San Diego, more specifically the San Diego Comic-Con. Unfortunately, SDCC has announced that they will not be holding an event for this year.
Oh, sad trombone is sad.
Yeah, but think how short that line to Hall H is right now.
Yes, I know. That's great.
No, it's still wrapped around the building twice.
Yeah.
It's just in 6-foot increments.
However, other comic organizers are debating viability of their 2020 offerings as well, with many different conventions canceling quicker than you can blink an eye. However, Creation Conventions, runner of several science fiction-based conventions around the country, seem to be extremely bullish on the idea of holding their annual Star Trek Las Vegas convention in August. In fact, they just announced several different ticket levels: silver, gold, platinum, palladium, who knows what's next.
Gold press latinum.
Latinum.
And they've put them all on sale. Do they know something we don't? Have they traveled to the future in a beat-up bird of prey? Who knows? Or are they just betting that Vegas will be back to normal by the middle of this summer? Stay tuned. We're not sure what's going on either, but they're more than glad to take your money.
That's going to be in terms of conventions, that's going to be a landmark if they can get that to run, because Dragon Con's on the heels of that, and the fall is just going to be packed with more cons. So if that runs, it's sort of the milestone that says cons are open.
Well, either that or it's the grand experiment, you know, okay, you can run it, and then mercifully there's more than 2 weeks before Dragon Con.
Yeah, no.
Where they can say, okay, the 14-day, oh, nope, sorry, nope, that did not work out at all. Okay, never mind.
Well, you know, but, you know, if it does go on, I'm really thinking of getting that Tholian web spacesuit finally. I'm just saying, you know, anything covering completely.
Hey, I've been cooped up in the house so much.
It's like this. It's just a grill. The air gets right through that grill in the front part of that outfit. I don't know.
Hey, I've been cooped up in the house so much. If they cancel Dragon Con, I may still go to Atlanta and hang out for a week. just to be somewhere.
Like most of us, I think we've prepaid the room, so you're kind of stuck.
At least one night has been taken off my credit card.
Yeah. Well, our entire stay is off the credit, but I'm assuming if the convention is canceled, at least we get a rollover till next year. I hope it,
or you got to scramble from scratch. It's going to be interesting, but
let the Hunger Games begin.
Yeah. So all these conventions, I mean, I guess I don't see how they have a choice. I mean, you go to these conventions and you're rubbing up all against people and they're not even ones you want to. And so,
you can always come to the Topicus Trek panel or the Comedy Forecast.
There's plenty of room there. You can just lie down. It's fine. We can social distance all day long in that room. It was cool. There you go.
Yeah. It only seats six people. There's still plenty of room.
But yeah,
and
so
that includes us.
But I mean, I think they're making the right call to cancel a bunch of these things right now. So, but hopefully there is a light at the end of the tunnel. We'll just have to wait and see.
As long as it's not a train, that's the important thing.
Hopefully that's not the light.
Yeah, and you know, we're definitely keeping an eye on that as well, just to see, because it is a harbinger of, you know, other things for the fall, as mentioned, New York Comic Con and all sorts of things. And we, you know, even though we don't go, I've only been once, we still use that as a lot of the studios use that as launching point for a lot of their promotions for stuff coming up. And that's when we get all those trailers that come out. Teaser trailers, you know, full trailers, rumors, you know, panels with, you know, leaked stuff coming out here, there, and all over the place.
If we only had a place they could leak that stuff.
Well, I mean, that's
a convention.
That's kind of the way, you know, things like CES are going. CES is going full on. We're just going to instead just do press releases and it just. I think it's much better when it's condensed and you're looking for it, right? You're expecting this news to happen on this day at this time, followed by that news. And yeah, there's a lot of noise, but still it's very concentrated and you get it all at once and you can sift through it afterwards rather than just being bombarded when everybody decides helter skelter when they're going to release, you know, these trailers and so forth. Mm. But I don't know. Like I said, between that and New York, that's when a lot of that stuff comes out. And we'll just have to see what people do if both of those things get canceled. All right. But let's move from the present. Let's jump way, way into the future. I was going to say 930 years, but that's from the date that's in the future already. So we're far, far away. Yes, doing that. But that's not jumping, really. That's like taking a starship there, but that's okay.
Well, how do you think they got there?
I don't know. It's science-y.
Okay. Story about Discovery. We still don't have a premiere date for season 3 of Star Trek Discovery, although filming wrapped before film and TV productions had to be shut down. Whew, thank goodness. Because some aspects of the show remain on hold, unfortunately. For instance, recording the score with an orchestra will have to wait until rules on larger group gatherings are eased. Oh, I would love to see how they pull that together virtually.
It can be done.
The guy with the bassoon is in his bathroom, you know?
Well, you literally could do it, but I think the acoustics would be a problem because you would do one of those things where you would have like a click track that you give everybody with basically the piano line and you all play to it, but the sound quality would be so all over the board.
I know.
It just would sound horrible.
Hey, I would like to see Weird Al just play the accordion and for all the music.
All right. We can get Russo on the phone, suggest that right now and see what he thinks.
Actually, when you said recording the bathroom, my mind immediately went, I started thinking of Weird Al doing his songs in the bathroom. You know, and they recorded.
Because you get better reverb in there, of course.
You do. That's why people sing in there.
Mm-hmm. So he should do the accordion for Star Trek Discovery.
Can we go back to our story here?
I'm sorry.
I would pay money to see that. Just saying. Okay, go ahead.
Craig's going to overdub season three with Weirdo.
Yeah,
sure. Okay. Anyway, Jonathan Frakes has given some insight into the season based on his time in the director's chair for three episodes of season three. In an interview with comicbook.com, Frakes said, Michael Burnham has found a new core, not to mention a new partner in crime.
Ooh.
So again, there's a big tonal shift on that show. Less driven by the pain and guilt of her past, and more about the magical reunification of the Discovery crew and whatever she went off to. God knows where she went as the Red Angel, so those two things coming back together is very much the theme, and how grateful everyone is, and what's next. It's got a lot of action adventure and not so much pain.
But
it's a comedy.
I need my pain. Oh, sorry, that's a different thing altogether. Yeah, we don't want to go there.
It's a comedy nail.
When Frakes is saying where she went as the Red Angel, I don't think that's a reference to a different time than Discovery. I think it's just a different location she ends up in than the Discovery does.
That's kind of the impression I got too.
But I had a thought. I want to play off of this because as I was working on this article, I had a thought about Section 31, the spinoff series. And I had an assumption about that show. And I said, well, why is that my assumption? My assumption was somehow, because remember, Giorgio is on the Discovery. Well, either she's going to get back to go back 930 years, or what if Section 31 in a very disjointed, as we're seeing from the teaser trailer for Discovery, is in need of repair. Well, what if Section 31 that she's in charge of is more along the line of behind the scenes things that the Federation would do to try to unify the Federation? You have a different take. It's still like outside the purview of what Section 31 does. You know, it's outside what the Federation would do, but that they're repurposed to have a different mission. And so she's kind of like, I'm not really, but I get to do things that aren't, you know, that the Federation wouldn't do. So I'm cool with that. But her mission is really more to repair rather than subvert. Thoughts? Nothing.
I see what you're saying. She could play, you know, play enemies to get them to work together and stuff like that. She always strikes me as more chaotic than building. So that would be a surprise for me.
I'm not sure if I have thoughts.
Yeah. Okay. Wait a minute. Is that a general statement or is that a statement about my hypotheses?
It's been a long day at work. It's pretty much general right now.
Okay, fair enough. Well, just something to chew on because we don't have any information on Section 31.
Hey, wasn't told I had to think tonight on this podcast.
I'm sorry. It's a podcast for thinkers. That's our subtitle for our show now.
Impulse.
It's no longer Impulse Power. It's the podcast for thinkers. To go, why am I listening to this? But anyway, yeah, so we still don't really have any firm handle on what's going on in season three, which I think is good in a lot of ways, because we can speculate away and we could be completely wrong about this stuff as we were with the other seasons as well, I enjoy that.
We do know that the music will be done on Kazoo.
We do. Weird Al would be learning the kazoo to be. Well, maybe he knows how to play the kazoo.
I would do it for free if we can get Discovery out the door. I would.
Yeah, they just need to go all digital. Just skip all the live people altogether. Get a synthesizer and go for it.
Okay, Babylon 5. You sit over there for a while. Okay.
You know where his influences lie.
Right.
By the way, I got a line for you or a couple of lines for you in the last episode of the podcast Today's Story, if you haven't listened to it already yet. All right. I will take up the last story for our subspace chatter that Charlie loves so much. We may not be able to go to theme parks at the moment, but the parks are finding ways to come to us. Of course, we recently had the secret revelation of how to make a Dole Whip float that Disney let out. It's like, ooh, wow, that's like really how the you know, sausage is made thing going on there.
Secret ingredients, pineapple. Yeah,
who would have thought that? Recently, Movie Park Germany released a video showing a 63-piece orchestra, and they were all in the same room together because this was a while ago, recording the music heard in queue and on ride for their Star Trek-themed roller coaster, Operation Enterprise. The recording session is preceded by informational text that speaks to behind-the-scenes aspects of the session, including the fact that needed Star Trek sheet music only arrived in Budapest, where they were doing the recording, one day before the recording session due to severe winter weather conditions in the U.S. So, you know, I'm sure this is one of those nail biters of, okay, we got the room book, we've flown all the musicians here, and we got nothing. Right. So, what do you do? The music includes themes from the original series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager, as well as the theme written specifically for the ride. I was listening to this today, and it's really a nice thing to have on in the background because you've got orchestrations of all those theme songs, and then every once in a while, there's something in there you go, I don't recognize that one. What is that one? It sounds kind of like the other stuff, but it's not, and that is the theme music that they wrote for the ride itself. So it's interspersed in there. And I think because the ride is relatively short, I think that this is stuff you're hearing mostly in the queue as atmosphere. We did cover when this ride first opened that you go through a queue area that was kind of like almost like Star Trek, the Experience, when you get to the bridge set. Mm-hmm. And you go through that and then you get into another queue area and there's displays and, you know, kind of instructional videos with somebody in Starfleet uniform telling you about, you know, what to expect on the ride. And then the ride is one of these roller coasters that shoots out the door and then comes back and then shoots out the door again and whips around and does all sorts of loops and things, where all the theming is lost completely until you go through another building for a short period of time, which is all lit up green. And what surprise, it's a Borg theme section in through there. Because Star Trek, we love the Borg, the villains you love to hate. And then you end back up again. So, but I would recommend listening to it. And so in the show notes in episode 65 over at thetopicistrek.com, I have a link not only to the article that has the video of the musical piece in it, but I also have a link to a video of the ride itself and the cue for the ride. So you get to see in context what this music would be heard as part of.
I would never put cue on a ride.
Well, it
depends.
You keep
saying cue for the ride, and it's like, I would not do that. Bad idea.
Well, is it the Rosario Dawson cue? Is it the John Delancey cue? Is it the, you know, which, you know?
Yeah, it's the power of Delancey.
Okay, I understand. All right, well, that wraps up our stories, much to Charlie's delight. And you think, okay, that's good. That's a good amount of stories. Well, we have more for you. We have 19 additional stories. Now, I know that sounds down, because remember, not a lot of new content coming out right now because people can't do anything. But still, we have 19 additional stories that you can check over. And in case you were wondering where the news is out of Vulcan, Alberta, Canada, yeah, Canada is still closed right now. You know, the Moose Out Friendship told you. So we will hopefully get there. Actually, the Moose couldn't tell you because the Moose was actually social distancing, and so you couldn't hear the Moose.
Kept staying away from us.
Yeah. He moved toward the moose and he keeps going back and back and back.
My sister was once bitten by a moose.
Was she now?
Mind you, moose bites can be pretty nasty.
Yes. How did one find oneself that close to the moose to begin with, though?
Only the Monty Python fans are laughing hysterically now, or maybe not even them.
I was thinking,
I don't recall that.
Holy Grail. So suddenly, the subtitles at the beginning. Anyway.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
My coffee has not kicked in yet. Yes, I'm having coffee at this time of night because I mention I finished putting out the episodes of the patrons at 4 o'clock this morning? Anyway, let's move on. Let's come back from subspace chatter with appropriate sound effect.
Unable to comply. Internal scanner relays have been damaged.
Hmm.
All right. We're going to have to solve around so much for our internal scanner relays. I'll get to work on those this week.
Yeah. Do you, you know what you do? You want to reverse the polarity.
That's a great idea.
Actually, if that doesn't work, reverse the Pulaski and see if that works. That might fix it.
Route the relays through the subspace conduit to the main deflector dish.
We can find those located conduit. In the Jeffries tube. You know,
everybody knows it's the EPS conduit.
And realign the isolinear chips.
Absolutely.
We had a Star Trek babble generator.
We are a Star Trek babble generator. All right, but it's time to go out now on our main mission. Appropriate sound effect. Wow, really? Really?
Oh, wait, that's a Vulcan heartbeat. I can tell.
Just hit all the buttons.
Who's in charge of these sound effects?
Not a podcaster.
Anyway, what's our main mission today?
Well, we are going to be continuing our ongoing and oft forgotten about series where we talk about the Star Trek movies in order. It has been. Well, things have been busy. I mean, we actually had, you know, new content. We had Star Trek Discovery. We had Picard. We had all sorts of things going on.
So now it's back to the well.
Now it's back to the well. And mercifully, we're over the sinkhole that was Star Trek V. And move on to Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
Which, of course, five again, so Gary can enjoy.
Oh, we can do that. What do you say, Gary? You want that?
What?
We can do Star Trek V again if you want.
No, that's fine, guys. We'll keep moving forward. But yeah. How could you not like marshmallows? Anyway.
Long story about doing a riff version of it. I'll tell you about it later. Okay. So this came out in 1991. And the story was by Leonard Nimoy, Lawrence Connor, and Mark Rosenthal, with the screenplay by Nicholas Meyer and Denny Martin Flynn. And of course, it was directed by Nicholas Meyer. So we're going to just generally give our impressions of it, thoughts on the movie, facts we know about the movie, odd pieces of trivia, any sorts of things that come to mind. The first thing I'll say about it is that I don't know about you guys, but I went into this one biting my nails after Star Trek V, going, is the franchise about to have the final nail in its coffin? Because Star Trek V pretty much put it on the edge of killing it. And it did anything but, you know, let me down. I really enjoyed it. It did have some issues, but I really, really enjoyed it. Now, did you guys all see it in the theater during its initial run?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
I distinctly remember one of my friends, Greg, stood up every time when they said The Undiscovered Country. He stood up and applauded. He was the only one in the theater. There's a memory for you.
Wow.
The Undiscovered Country itself, as we know that the trivia behind that, you know, never let an idea go to waste, because that was the initial, one of the original titles of Star Trek II, was Star Trek II, The Undiscovered Country, and which was also directed and written by Nicholas Meyer. And so here it is back again, several years later, 9 years later, in fact, which I think that I liked it better as the title for Star Trek II, because really, you know, it's a reference to death, and, you know, and therefore I thought it was very appropriate to the movie in which Spock dies. But, you know, I think it works here as a title.
It does, because in this context, they said it's about the future.
Yeah.
Not so much death, but it's the future. We don't know what's out there.
The unknown, yes.
I do find it interesting, and I hang on to my Star Trek VI poster ever so carefully, because the original release date was December 13th, 1991, and they bumped that up a week. So there are two sets of posters, ones that say 12/13/91 and ones that say 12/6/91. They moved it because it was going up against Dustin Hoffman's Hook Well, we all know how that turned out.
Yeah, that was an unnecessary move. They
jump on the competition. But I have hanging in the studio one of my 12/13/91 posters.
Excellent, excellent.
Nice, that's cool.
What about NBS's initial thoughts when they came out of the theater? You know, what do you recall? What your impression? I mean, I know this is a while ago, but having experienced your previous experience with the movie was 5. Now we're already several seasons into Next Generation at this point, but you know, this is a movie, and do you recall what you were thinking or while you were watching it?
My initial impression was, okay, we're back in the game. We've got the action. We've got a good storyline. We've brought the Klingons in. We've made them, you know, part of the story, a very active part of the story. There's conspiracy, which we really didn't see a lot of that in. Well, this was post TNG, so we did see some Starfleet's not all that clean cut.
Where they blew up the guy's face.
Well, Roddenberry was dead, so now they could do this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's true. I mean, it is what it is, guys.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Title card for him at the beginning because he had passed at this point. So, it was a little open more than it's been. So,
what was your initial thoughts, Gary? I'll share mine after you.
I got to see it with the same group of people I had seen 3, 4, and 5 with. We all went to the same movie theater, waited outside opening day. Mm-hmm. And it was about the only times we ever saw each other was just the Star Trek movies. But it was the same crowd and we had a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. It felt a lot more like they took an episode and put it on steroids, where, you know, I felt like you had the teaser with Sulu. We had this whole action. Kirk got to sleep with somebody. I think, and the humor was there, but there was still, you know, serious points to it. I thought it was very well balanced. I was really sad at the end, because when I saw the credits with the signatures, I realized that they're done. It doesn't matter how good it does. Mm-hmm. This is it. You know, like we knew TNG was doing pretty well, and they were pushing for a movie already, so it was just a matter of time. And so I was happy that they gave this to us, because I felt like after 5, I didn't expect it, and to have pulled it off so well, I was glad they brought Nick Meyer back to pull it together for us. And it was really good. You know, Scotty didn't look like a fool.
The cast was good too. I mean, Christopher Plummer was in there. Although once I recognized the Federation president as Kurtwood Smith from RoboCop, that's a hard image to get out of your mind. So that when he's addressing everybody in the chamber,
he's played a million characters in Star Trek as well.
Yeah, he has.
I half expected him to say, "I like it."
I mean, I liked him better. I felt he was very good in this role. I didn't like him so much in the Year of Hell, the Voyager episode. I felt like he wasn't the right fit for that character. But this, I don't know. I really liked him in this role.
I would love to see somebody do that cosplay with the long white hair. That would just be so awesome.
I think you should own that, Chuck. You do a bald wig. What do you mean how?
Listen, as someone who's put the bald on before, it gets pretty hot.
Let me share my impressions real quick. So, I was a little disenchanted with Star Trek 5, just like everybody else. However,
spoiler alert.
I know, but after seeing this, I loved it because it had, a little bit of different tone than some of the other stuff we've seen up until then. It was more of a conspiracy mystery they were trying to figure out as they went on, and I thoroughly loved it. It's actually been one of my go-to, you know, when I'm sitting here going, I don't really want to watch, but let's watch the Undiscovered Country. Yeah. It's always been one of my go-tos, to watch that or, you know, Con or something like that. But I loved it. I thought all the, the little bit of humor that was here and there was spot on. The conspiracy part was pretty good. I enjoyed it. That was great. And I think it was a great send-off. The TOS.
What if they didn't shoot the right Kirk when there were two Kirks?
Yes, maybe they. Yeah. She's been masquerading since then.
Well, I mean,
exhausting.
She dies in the next movie, but that's okay.
But then she's back.
What?
My goodness. Anyway, I enjoyed it. And like I said, I thought the humor was in the right spots. And, you know, it was good.
I thought it was one of the things that I thought is that this was the 25th anniversary of Star Trek. And I felt like of all the movies that came out that were in anniversary years, I mean, you had the Voyage Home was in 20th anniversary. And of course, Star Trek Beyond was 50th anniversary, that this one in subtle ways and in big ways really was a nod to all of Star Trek, certainly mostly TOS, but the fact that you had Michael Dorn in there, and although we'll talk about another person who was in it that really wasn't Trek at the time, that you have nods to everything. You bring back as many characters as you can. You kind of give this resolution to what happens to Sulu. He gets his own command, as Gary pointed out, you know, Kirk being Kirk, doing all the Kirkism things that Kirk should be doing and as Kirk. And
Kirk out.
It gave this nice snapshot of Trek all in one piece. And I think that it accomplished it. I think that the Voyage Home just happened to be during the year of the 20th anniversary. Whereas this one, because you also had the activities going on of the episodes that Deep Space Nine and Voyager did that same year, and the Voyager one tied into tied into this because you had the flashback to Captain Sulu in that with Tuvok on the Excelsior. So and then the Deep Space Nine one was Trials and Tribulations. So I felt like I also thought that this had a much better. I don't know what its budget was compared to Star Trek V, and it would be hard to believe that it had a higher budget, because why would you invest more when your previous movie didn't do as well?
Because Clinton, this is an even number movie. You know it's going to be better.
I realize that.
It was the budget. It was an even number.
But remember that when the motion picture Paramount claims underperformed, although those numbers we know are still kind of questionable, that they slashed the budget for Star Trek II, which is why you know the production quality went down. You had a television producer come in. So Star Trek V didn't do well, and yet the look of Star Trek VI is so much more lush than Star Trek V was.
Well, do you think that's partially they had the TNG budget to pull on? Because as I was watching it for this show, you could see the transporter. You could see engineering. You could see 10 forward. You could see a whole bunch of locations all over the place. And so, you know, they didn't even have to build a lot of sets because they were just repurposing, you know, TNG sets.
Right. Well, unless I'm mistaken, and I often am, the engine room in Next Generation is the engine room from the Star Trek movies. And then Star Trek movies started repurposing the TNG engine room. So, you know, the very circular thing going on here, that column was there the entire time from Star Trek, the motion picture onward. Also, go ahead.
I was going to say the budget for Star Trek V was $30 million.
Okay.
The budget for Star Trek VI was $27 million. So roughly the same, maybe, you know, a little difference. But Generations was $38 million.
Right. You adjust a bit for inflation. So actually it was like even a little bit under the $3 million under. So,
well, I don't know. I don't know if you'd adjust because there's only a couple of years between those two movies, but.
As the 90s, you do adjusting, you know.
From 89 to 91, I don't know.
Let us not overlook the controversial mind meld scene, too.
Yes, I was going to get into that. That scene, My wife, Bonnie, she found extremely disturbing.
A lot of women did.
And
a lot of men did too.
Un-Spock-like. Yeah. I mean, out of character. Yeah.
And you could clearly tell that when they got to that scene, that even everybody on set knew that, okay, this is really pushing the edge of what we're supposed to do, because it stayed very quiet. Nobody's moving around. There's no music, you know, to start off this thing. It's just,
yeah,
okay, we're just gonna do this now, and we know that it's a thing.
See, I wish they would have done something a little bit more to catch her a little more in the act, rather than having to go get the names and stuff from her head, you know, like that. But, and yeah, it was awkward to kind of watch.
I mean, you know, yeah, essentially she was mine.
Intercepted a communication, you know, or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have to assume that there were many discussions about doing this. And of course, we can't be flies on the wall to know how those discussions went. It's hard to think they did this just for shock value. It was shocking, but I don't know. I just can't see them saying, oh, you know, we'll get all the kids in there with when we have a scene like this, you know.
Right.
So I don't know. I also thought it was interesting that initially that was going to be Savick, was going to be that character instead of Valeris.
No, it was overruled by Gene Roddenberry.
Right.
Before he said right. No.
And and Robin Curtis talks about that, you know, she was grateful for that. And I don't know how I would have felt about that. I would have felt like that was too much there. I don't watch the Mission Impossible franchise because of what happened in the first Mission Impossible movie, where Phelps is made out to be the bad guy. And I feel like this would be the same thing if Savick, after all this time, turns out to be someone who just would give it up, you know, say, I don't trust the Klingons and I'm going to betray the Federation to save it or something like that. I don't see it. I couldn't see it happening.
Yeah. That would have put a whole different tone on the movie.
And I understand that, you know, Meyer was involved in the creation of the Savick character. So I can see where he probably feels like he has ownership stake in there, to be able to make this like an arc or something. But I just,
You know, Spock did talk to her and in a way that if you were to swap out, Savick's name in there, you would have thought it would have sounded like it. Cause especially when they're in his quarters, you know, I've been watching your career for a long time. It's like, okay, well, it sounds like he's talking to Savick, but I know he's not, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I do have one fundamental problem with this movie, and I've mentioned this once before. Are you ready to move on, or you want to?
No, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
All right. So, you know, at the end of Star Trek V, they're basically drinking and hanging out with the Klingons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then in this movie, what are the big thing? Oh, we've never been this close before. You know, I'm like, you were just drinking with them in the last movie.
maybe this movie itself says that movie didn't happen.
Yeah. weren't they just drinking with General Korg or something? Or the rest they had to get Korg to put him in his place?
No, they were all hanging out. And then, they were all hanging out together. And remember,
they had Chekhov flown was a checking Klingon out the bird Klingon of play, for crying out loud, with Klingons on board it.
Yeah. Bird of play.
They did not celebrate in front of the Klingons.
They did.
Yes, please, Admiral. Not in front of the Klingons. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, but I just thought that was a weird thing. I remember seeing them, obviously, on Discovered Country. And then later on, watching Star Trek V again, I was like, wait a minute. They just said that they haven't never been this close before. Like, whatever.
Yeah, like I said, I feel like this movie said, look, we'll take the animated series as canon over Star Trek V. You know,
like many other people wanted to do. You know?
Hey, by the way, I was looking at these budget numbers that we mentioned a moment ago. So Star Trek, the motion picture, had $35 million. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, 12.
Yes.
Yep.
And like I said, severely cut.
I think that that tells you something right there. Money does not make a good movie.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, but also the missteps in the production of Star Trek, the motion picture, that helped drive up the price that high, including like having to redo all the special effects.
Yeah, they were
at the last minute, which I'm sure was charged like five times the amount to do it.
Well, Star Trek 3 had 18 million.
Whatever, right, because Star Trek II made a lot of money, you know, and, you know, that was Harv Bennett's thing when they came in and said, you know, well, you know, they told him the budget. I think it was at that time it was Michael Eisner was in charge of Paramount. He said, you know, he brought Harv and said, what movie could you make for this amount of money? Because he told him the budget of Star Trek, the motion picture. And Harv said, I can give you five movies for that amount of money.
Wow.
They tell you in Star Trek 3 right up front, the dude with the ears, permits many, money more.
Yeah, see? He was right all this time, right in front of your face.
Yeah, they were literally telling us.
So we talked about the fact, I mentioned that we had homages to other things in there. Worf is in this, but it's not Worf, it's Worf's
grandfather.
Great. Yes.
Great grandfather.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And that was interesting. Apparently, that was just Nicholas Meyer saying, "Oh, I want to have somebody from like Next Generation." And then that's that. You know, let's put Worf in. And somebody said, "It's 75 years before Worf is."
Yeah, well,
if you want family resemblance, use the same actor.
Okay. And I was also thinking that there's another thought I had when I was thinking about this movie is that, okay, you have Worf and Worf's, this is grandfather, right? Or great grandfather.
He's a lawyer?
Grandfather.
Okay.
Are there Klingon lawyers?
So they look identical. Okay. And then you have Dr. Sung and his son look identical. And you have Tasha Yar's daughter look identical to Tasha Yar. The one time it was absolutely critical to have the person look like the other person. The entire movie was based on that premise.
Right.
Never mind. Let's move on from that thought. So he's in there, and it was confusing at first because you're going, why is Worf in this thing? I don't understand. And they don't really explain that in the course of the movie because how could they? They can't reference the great. So it's like, okay, but you know, you just have to know that that's why Worf is in this thing.
They refer to him as Worf, father of Moog.
Exactly. Oh, now I get it. But in a cut scene, actually two critical cut scenes in The Undiscovered Country, which were restored for the first release on DVD and I think Laserdisc. Rene Auberjonois is also in Star Trek VI, and he plays an operative. The first scene happens right after the John Shook's Klingon ambassador is talking to the president of the Federation, and he leaves the room just as this gaggle of Starfleet officers come in, including Cartwright. And the Rene Auberjonois character begins to give a presentation on a paper flipboard with a laser pointer.
PowerPoint.
Really high. Yeah, it wasn't even PowerPoint. The PowerPoint was at the beginning when Spock came on.
The projector was broke. What are you going to do? You got to have a plan B.
So he was presenting.
The Kinko's down below in the office building.
Now, he was presenting a rescue plan for, you know, to rescue Kirk and McCoy. Now, something struck me odd about that scene as well as the paper flipboard. I don't understand why the Romulan ambassador was still in the room at that point.
Just so he can serve as objection.
I guess.
Yeah, it made no sense.
Now the interesting part. So he's got this flipboard, and then the president says, "I will, you know, I'll consider this." Blah blah blah. Thank you for your input. And as we know, the president is not involved in this conspiracy, although Cartwright is. And so they all leave. Well, some of them leave. And then you have the daughter of the chancellor Gorkon, who's now the chancellor, come on and talk to the president. The flipboard is still right next to his desk, which is saying, and, you know, no rescue attempts. Of course not. You know, there's a flipboard with the plans right there.
No, that's my stock portfolio. I've been talking
to my
investors.
Maybe that's why she added the line. Hey, wait, that looks like a rescue plan. And you must guarantee there are no rescue plans.
What? What? Yeah. What are you talking? What? There's no, you know, pull down the cover sheet. There's what? There's no, that's just, I was just, yeah, that's my portfolio. My investment banker was in and I just kind of, So Renee is cut out in that because that portion of that scene is missing. Then at the very end, when Scotty shoots the assassin who's about to kill the president of the Federation, that Klingon goes flying off the balcony and lands and is dead on the floor. And you see people rush over to him. In the scene that got cut, suddenly you see a Klingon hand, because he's clearly got the uniform on, dip into the blood that's next to the Klingon. And you hear Worf's voice say, "This is not Klingon blood." And they pull a mask off of the Klingon, and it's the Rene Auberjonois character. What? So he was not shape-shifting. He was actually just in disguise.
Hanging out.
I didn't get the point of that at all. We already knew that Chang was coordinating. Why did he need to be wearing a mask?
Right. Why just not, unless there was some reason he wasn't supposed to be there and somehow he got him. But I also thought it made a little bit more sense as to why, I think it was also for ratings purposes, but why the Klingons were clearly shown to have Pepto-Bismol as their blood. Mm. Because that way at the end shot, when you have the shot in there, it's not that color.
Hey, and by the way, from here on out, you got to have purple blood for Klingons because it's canon now.
Pink.
I mean, pink, well, not purple. I mean, yeah, pink.
Yeah, and I think we've had scenes since then where they don't. So, no. You know, so much for that.
Discovery kind of nixed that.
So I mean, like I said, if anything helps that odd choice make sense is the fact that you're able to, oh yes, I can also tell why he's saying that's not Klingon blood just by looking at it because it's not that same color.
And it's not green. So we know he's not Vulcan or Romulan. Right.
But yeah, it made no sense as to why did he have to be in disguise. I don't understand that. So I don't miss those scenes at all.
That's
you know, sorry.
Casually walk in unrecognized. Otherwise, if he'd walked in, you know, as the, what was he, a counselor or councilman or
Colonel West.
Colonel West. If he'd walked in, people would have gone, why is Colonel West here?
Yeah, I suppose.
He's not on the invite list, but this no-name Klingon, he's fine. Just let him in.
Yeah. Who has no name at all? So clearly he's on the list.
Yeah.
See that blank space at the bottom? That's me. Oh, okay, I get it now. All right.
I'll be sitting upstairs in the balcony.
Yeah. Much better view from up there. I think those were wise choices to take it out, and why it was in the director's cut, put back in the director's cut. I don't understand because Nick really wanted that in there for some reason. I don't know.
I distinctly remember those scenes. I thought I remember them from the theater, but I guess I've seen it so many times. I don't remember which ones had which scenes in them, but
I think I saw them during a TV airing at one point. They, as Clinton was saying, you know, they threw in a bunch of stuff sometimes when they were airing them old fashioned over the air. Yeah.
Yeah. We also did have a shapeshifter in this movie.
Yes. And that's an interesting question. You know, is it a changeling? Is it?
Well,
cameloid.
She said she was a cameloid.
Yeah. But remember, they didn't know who they were either. Yo, Odo didn't know who he was.
That's true.
Kirk was saying, I thought you were a myth. Like there's very, you know, it's almost non-existent. Like there's not a full planet of these people.
Well, the question is, though, and it never really resolved what she felt her true form was. Because when asked the question, I don't think she answered it.
I don't think we ever saw it, to be honest with you.
Right. So I think you can make the argument that, well, maybe she didn't know, just like, you know, and, you know, what you're going to say, oh, I'm a puddle of ooze that sleeps in a bucket. You know, could she be one of the founders? Possibly, I suppose. I don't know. Let's see.
I do have two nitpicks that I'd love to get
those nits.
Or at least you guys, or at least you guys answering. You know, what was this? It was a new two things with uniforms. Valeris's uniform, her, when did they stop matching the turtleneck with the jacket? She had a red turtleneck and like a bluish green stripe. Whose suit was she wearing for this movie that they didn't
want to get? That's how you spot the imposters. They stole the uniform.
And then secondly, you know, we saw when they were having the meeting at the beginning, all the Starfleet brass, as Kirk referred to them, all had like these, you know, sort of, I'll call them military ribbons on their jackets that we had never seen before in any Star Trek thing. And I understand Meyer was probably trying to military it up, but I'm thinking to myself, geez, Kirk, Spock, McCoy, shouldn't they have a whole slew of them too at this point?
We've seen a lot of ones that they had in court martial. We saw, like, you know, Kirk had like 400 of them. He's like, oh, I'm not wearing any clothes. I'm just wearing my ribbons here. So, you know,
why are they so blank?
maybe it was a full dress up, you know?
Maybe. I don't know. I was like, how come everybody else gets them and they don't get some bling?
Forgot to bring my trunk full of medals.
Right. And I think one of the other problems that people have with this movie, and I think even Shatner, you know, said, I really wasn't comfortable with this let them die, you know, statement that Kirk makes at the beginning.
Yeah, that was, I know, a little off character, I think.
Yeah, I know you're trying to be here so you can get there in the story, but it was a bit much.
He's never forgiven him for the death of his son.
So I hear.
Well, but I know what Clint's saying. Between 5 to 6, it would have been nice if there was some sort of incident referred to or some reason for this increased militarism or, you know, this sort of even more Cold War mentality to pop up. But a line or two might have done it. But
I also thought it was interesting that here was the Federation planning the evacuation of Kronos. I thought, oh, well, that's going to go so well, so you'd be able to use those exact same plans in a few years. So hold on to that file.
Klingons, Romulans. We're going to evacuate somebody.
As you're doing all the cutaways to all the other action, and the president is still talking at Camp Kinnamer, that's what he's talking about. And, you know, this, you know, the evacuation plan, you know, such and such and so and so. I go, wow, this is all sounding very familiar.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, how did Kronos get saved? Because later on in Deep Space Nine, we're seeing it all the time.
Right. Well, so it's not defined. So do we know how close Praxis is to Kronos?
Can't be too far.
They said it was a moon, a Klingon moon. So
yeah, but a Klingon moon could mean a Klingon moon in their empire.
Well, not they said it was going to poison the planet, so I'm guessing it was close enough.
Yeah, it's got to be close enough for them to mine and take the air over. I don't know, whatever.
Well, they mine on Merapente, and you don't necessarily get the impression that it's like next to Kling, you know, either. So, and next to Kronos. So I don't know. I just didn't get a good sense of, you know, because if the explosion was that violent, that close,
that would have done some damage.
Yeah, I can't see. Oh, by the way, we got like, you know, a couple of months to evacuate people. No, the atmosphere has been ripped from the planet at that point. So it's like, no, there's nothing left. So I just didn't get a sense of, I didn't go over to check at Memory Alpha to see if there's some definition of, you know, how far away Praxis was supposed to be. From there,
even,
but I'm also,
I'd have to assume it wasn't the only moon of the Klingon world, like, because we have one moon, and if we lost even a good chunk of our moon, not to mention the whole thing, there's a lot of science behind it. We would suddenly, our axis would start to tilt. It wouldn't be stabilized at 23.5 degrees. We'd get crazy seasonal shifts. We'd get crazy weather that goes along with that. So it's not like, oh, we lost the moon, that's too bad. I mean, the whole Space 1999 thing is way off track because they basically left the Earth.
Let it go.
Wait, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. The topic is, that's it.
1999.
Yeah, exactly.
Alpha base.
Hey, Gary, so, by the way, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I noticed when you mentioned that about the undershirt, the tunic under the jacket.
Yeah.
About Valeris being red.
You didn't like red.
The red on red? Wait a minute.
It wasn't so, red on red. That's the problem.
No, it was like a maroon or red. Yeah. But I noticed that McCoy has green and Chekhov and Uhura have like gray, like dark gray, not dark gray, but a grayish color. So I just hadn't thought about it that much. But yeah, the red looked weird against the maroon.
I thought it was interesting that they go through all these changes, you know, whether it's, you know, the complete refit of the uniform between the motion picture and Star Trek II, and then we've got these variants like we're talking about here and other stuff. Poor engineering. No love. They're still wearing the same things that they were wearing in Star Trek the Motion Picture. You know, the same.
Scotty's been wearing that vest and just hanging.
Yeah. That uncomfortable collar thing that's like, you know, don't lean over, you're gonna like slit your throat, you know, with that thing. And then they had that nod, the security guard who comes in after they shoot off the phaser in the kitchen, which is a sticking point with some people I know about the fact that this oversized kitchen there.
And fire extinguishers, yeah.
Yeah, that the security guard comes in and he's wearing the vest part of that security outfit from the motion picture over another uniform. Yeah. It's just like, I threw this whole outfit together, you know, on the spur of the moment.
Somebody's shooting. I better wear something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Them with some mighty thick mashed potatoes. That's all I got to say.
I do enjoy the fact that they shoot off this thing and you have these various people coming in at various points going, you know, who's shooting off a phaser, like with various levels of concern.
And Uhura comes in. Why would your communications officer come in?
Why would Scotty come in and just like barge in without a phaser and go, who's shooting off a phaser in here? I was like, well, maybe there's a problem if somebody's shooting off a phaser and you might want to have one.
How about Chekhov, who's the security officer, doesn't know that alarms go off when phasers fire?
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about those potatoes. They just sat there.
I know.
There's some thick spuds.
They were fully cooked by that point, so that's good eating. Give that stuff to Porthos. I don't know.
Oh, you've never enjoyed mashed potatoes until you've had them in the original Klingon version?
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Oh, I have 20 things a Klingon programmer. Look it up on the internet. It's funny. You've never really appreciated Dilbert until you've read it in the original Klingon.
So that brings me to one last question before we wrap it up. Do you have a favorite quotable line? Because we've done a lot of them. I will toss out mine. I should have made this maybe the Warp Speed Roundtable, but too late for that. Yeah. What I really liked was near the end when they're discussing what they're going to do because they're trying to, you know, deal with the situation on the Enterprise. And Scotty says, then we're dead. And I love Spock's reply. I've been dead before, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just like, it's no big deal. I've been dead before. We can get out. Yeah. We can get out of this.
Yeah. Totally reversible.
My favorite line was Sulu's when they said, "Do you want to report this? Are you kidding?" It's a nice Oscar shot.
Are you kidding?
For George Takei.
Then flare apart.
Oh, so many lines to choose from in that movie. I'll just pick one out of thin air, and it would probably be there's something bitterly sweet when Chang is attacking the Enterprise, and he's spinning around in his chair, cry havoc, and let slip the dogs of war. You know he's lost it at that point.
Yeah.
He's quoting Shakespeare in English.
That's right. Not even in the original Klingon. And then he's thinking, was that over the top? No, that was fine. Perfectly fine, Christopher. It was great. Yeah, just go with that.
Oh, I have one last little tidbit about this movie before we leave it.
Oh, please, please do.
I know no one thought it an odd in any way that Christian Slater appeared in the movie. You know, he seems such a perfect fit for a Star Trek movie because, well, why not? The behind the scenes story is that his mother, Mary Jo Slater, cast for the television show and the movies, and she squeezed him into the film.
Now, when you saw the movie in the theaters back in the day,
yes,
was the reaction in your audience the same as when I saw it, where he first comes in and he's backlit and you get this kind of this rumble of that voice sounds familiar, and then the light comes up half, and you see his face, and he goes, oh, look, it's Christian. It's like,
yeah.
totally taking you out of the moment because everybody just realizing at that point, oh, that's Christian Slater.
Yeah, it did. I'm like, what was the hell weird. Is he doing? Did they put on a wrong reel? What what happened? Yeah, it was a very odd thing, but his mother cast for Star Trek for decades, and so she squeezed him in. I heard he even took the uniform home. So.
As lots of people tended to do, there's that shot of George Takei with all of his memorabilia when he has the Olympic torch he'll be carrying. And where did you get that Star Trek uniform, George? I don't think you were supposed to be taking that home with you. Oh, hey, and one piece of trivia. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's not trivia. It's just like I found it amusing that there is a Dax in this movie.
Yes,
Not the one you're expecting it to be.
Maybe it is the same Dax. She talked about meeting McCoy, so you never know.
Ooh, well played, well played.
Yeah. By the way, I do have a quote.
Okay.
I love it when General Chang's going on and on, and McCoy says, "I'd give real money if he'd shut up."
That's a good one. goes well against my line. There you go.
Yeah. Give real money if he'd shut up.
All the different taglines thrown out during this movie, even my teenage daughter said, "Gosh, if this was a drinking game, you'd be really messed up."
Wait a minute. Consider the source there, Gary.
What? Yeah, I know. Yeah, we'll have an intervention later.
Yeah. All right, but now it's time to come back from our warp speed roundtable. Appropriate sound effect.
There you go.
It just goes on.
Okay.
We'll come back in 5 minutes when that's done. And time for our Warp Speed Roundtable. And I posted this earlier today to Facebook, and I think I got a reply on it, so I'm going to get that.
Yes, from Joe Law.
Oh, you've got that up? Okay, great. I do. So I'll let you read that when we get there. So last time around, we asked, what bonus skill do you wish Picard had been given? And we actually have the person here with us.
Oh, boy. No problem.
Who gave a reply. Because I was trying to suss what your response meant. Do you want to? Gary's reply was life. And I had my certain thoughts about what that meant, but I could be overreading into this. What did you mean by life?
Well, generally, I'm in the camp that says Picard died at the end of the series. He may be may have been reproduced into that android body, I guess, synthoid body, but he's dead. And they covered this ground on TNG with Ira Graves in Measure of
Man,
where they said, no, he says your life is over. Even if you put your engrams in there, your life has been finished. Let Data live his. So, I mean, I think they covered it. And so while I will watch season two, while I will enjoy it, even though I still think Picard might be left in the Nexus anyway, I still think that at this point he is definitely dead. So we will move forward with this new character. I would have preferred it to have been what they were leading up to, which was bringing Data back, which they flip-flopped on us at the last minute. But
he can have a new favorite drink. I just thought of something.
Could have had both. But oh well. So I wish Picard had kept life, not been killed and put into an android body.
Okay, fair enough. Now, are you saying that you would like him to have a Spock-type resurrection, or just you don't get to the point where he dies in the first place?
I wanted them to use that little magical device that they rebuilt the ship with to start it again.
Let it do that
to cure that, that syndrome thing that he had in his brain. I said, wow, they're introducing the thing, how they're going to save him. Great. And then it didn't happen. So, I'm not bitter much. But, I thought they pretty much set it up, pulled everything away from me, including Picard's life and Data's death. So I was not as thrilled as I thought the season would end.
Yeah, I think you're striking the same chord as a lot of people that I talked to another person, the listener Diane, who got a chance to actually recently watch Picard. She really liked it, except for the end. Wasn't crazy about the ending. Okay, well, let's move on to
this week's question. I'm moving on. Now that he's a synth.
Yes.
He can give up his Earl Grey tea hot in favor of synth. The hall.
Oh boy. And moving right along.
Yes. Okay. So anyway, what I was saying was
that just cost us a couple of listeners.
Yeah. Well, great. Our listener is gone. Wonderful.
We're down to, we owe them now.
That's right. We do. We owe them a life. There we go. This time around, it's a very simple question that it came up when I was listening to actually that that piece I was talking about earlier from the Star Trek ride in Germany. Is when you hear the classic Jerry Goldsmith theme song, which first comes to mind for you? Do you first think, oh, there's the Star Trek the Motion Picture theme? Or do you think first, oh, there's the Star Trek The Next Generation theme? So I will go around the horn, starting with Chuck.
Well, then I'm going to lean heavily on our wonderful listener, Joe Law, who responded, because I agree with his opinion. He said, TNG, just because of hearing it for seven seasons times two. He's obviously been through this a couple times. And then some, versus the half a dozen times I've seen the movie. So I think just... It's ingrained more to me as part of TNG. I know it was first in the motion picture, but just, I think just from raw frequency, it's a TNG thing to me.
Okay. I will next go to Gary.
I'm going to echo what Chuck said. I've marinated in so many episodes that, you know, when I close my eyes, I hear the Next Generation theme coming through. Honestly, I'm hard pressed, even though I've watched the movie probably more than a dozen times, to hear in my head the theme song for the motion picture. It doesn't reverberate the way that the next gen tones do for me.
Okay, I will next go around to Craig.
Well, I would say I am in the three boat here because I'm in the same situation. I've heard it so many times with the. Even though I kind of skipped the intro on Netflix now, because we have that wonderful little button.
Oh, yeah. But, you hear, and you hit the skip intro, dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Every time. I know,
it's like Voyager starts off, it's like whatever.
I do that to Donna, but while she's in the kitchen, I just go, da, da, dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, I will say this though. Speaking of sound, soundtracks, the soundtrack to Undiscovered Country is quite good. It's quite good.
Yeah, it's not my all-time favorite, but it's still
good. Yeah. I like it. It's different. It's got its own little thing, but I love it.
I think it is serviceable. I don't love it, but well, I think it serves. I think it suits what it needs to do quite well.
Go ahead and I want to tell you something about that soundtrack, but go ahead, Clinton. I want to hear your what you think.
When I hear those notes, I will always think of Star Trek the Motion Picture first. I think it's
going to say that. I knew it.
Yep. Yeah. it came out. Well, I think because the impression that it had when I saw, so you're a fan of Star Trek since the first airing of the first episode, the first night. And back when I had to, guess powered television. And so you're used to the classic theme, right? That's all you know. Even the weird variant of it that they had to use for the animated series, it was kind of a riff on the original song. And you just get this overpowering, seafaring feel, masterful thing, and you go, what in the world? And it just was amazing and leads right into the Klingon sequence, which is still riffed to this day for the Klingon music. And it just, I think because of that initial hit of it, and then I had the soundtrack album, played that ad nauseum, that when I first heard it on Next Generation, my first thought was,
rip-off.
Well, I thought it was smart. You've got it. You might as well use it because they're not using it at that point. They were not using it for the movies. They'd moved on to other scores. They did come back to it eventually, but that makes sense. But to me, it's Star Trek, the motion pictures theme being used for Star Trek, mm-hmm. the Next Generation. And, listening to that music today, I said, I don't know which one it's supposed to be. And I realized, oh, it's supposed to be the one from the show because they're just doing themes of the shows. You've got TOS music, you've got Next Generation, you've got Voyager, and you've got Deep Space Nine. But I'm hearing Star Trek the Motion Picture in my head. That's the music that I'm hearing and not, you know, not immediately associating it the other way. And I can understand it's that same feeling that your first Star Trek is your favorite Trek and your first, you know, where you come in, especially when you come in new to something, is kind of, that's going to leave the impression upon you. So I can understand a lot of people saying, well, you know, the first real Trek that I'm watching is fresh and new and on a weekly basis is this. That's going to be the thing that, you know, gets imprinted as to what that thing is.
Well, it's good that they didn't go with their first choice for Next Generation. You know what that was, right?
Was that Weird Al doing something?
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Wait, it's been a long time.
Yeah, thank goodness they never did that.
They saved that one for the real good footage.
Yeah.
Save the best for last. No, that's just the thing that killed it. That's not saving the best for last. That's right.
Well, I'll tell you my story. I've talked about this before, but I was back in the day when I was playing on a local area network for all you kids. And, you know, we had to wire our computers up together to
play games. Oh, your gas-powered internet. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Cool. I had to pedal that thing.
Tin cans and string. Yeah.
So we were playing Quake, and a lot of those games like Doom and Quake and all that, they would allow you to, if you had a audio disc in the CD player or CD drive on your computer, it would play the music. And so I'm playing the game and it cuts. I finished the level and it shows like a little a scene that shows your stats. And then it would start playing one of the tracks off the Undiscovered Country. And that music matched up with that game just perfect. Had the right tone, and I was like, oh, that was awesome. And I just, every time I played that game, I had to leave the CD in just for that.
Now, what happens if you try to use that score with The Wizard of Oz? Does it work?
Well, you have to line it up, and then once you line them up, then, you know, Pink Floyd and
Gilligan's Island.
Yeah.
A little bit of Alf in there. No, so...
I was doing House of the Rising Sun in Gilligan's Island. Sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, I just
that's cool. That's cool. Like I said, and that's the same thing. It's kind of this association you make, you know, it's like, where does that thing come in?
Yeah.
I think that a lot of the scores for the Star Trek movies are good. There's one or two you can point at and go, but I think mostly they're serviceable. And, you know, a lot of the stuff, especially the stuff that Jerry Goldsmith did, you know, it's like, it's epic sounding. And I think that that's what you want. You want to have something that's saying it's a movie and this is epic and this is different than the television. This is, you know, something outstanding and making you pay attention to it. And I think that for The Undiscovered Country, because Nicholas Meyer, as we know, is a big Sherlock Holmes fan, which is why we have this whole mystery thing going on in The Undiscovered Country, is that I feel like that score could work in that type of movie as well. Mm-hmm. So you could substitute it for some sort of film noir or, you know, some kind of other detective or crime solving thing. And I think it would have that same feel to it for a motion picture score for something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Alrighty, well, it's time to refill the dilithium chamber and to warp on out of here. And remember, we're now the podcast for thinkers. But anyway, yes, we'll run with that for as long as that's going to work. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. I just finished up the final chapter of my 20-part podcast today in April main story, and so you can now binge the entire thing. It's a bingeable piece of entertainment for your needs at home. And you can also find me on Twitter @ Comedy Forecast, on Facebook @ Comedy Forecast. I am going to try to do an experiment on IGTV. That's Instagram television starting on May 1st. It's going to be a very short thing. It's a weird premise for just something to do on a daily basis. Very short. So I think if you're following me on Instagram, I think you get a notification or one of those little icons someplace that I've got content there as well. I'm not quite sure how that works. I'll figure that out as I go along as well. So you can maybe find me there as well. And who speaks for not everybody else, but who speaks between Chuck and Craig for you guys?
I defer to you, Chuck. Go ahead.
Oh, I guess one of us has to think tonight. You can find us.
A podcast for thinkers.
You can find us at Technorama Podcast. TechNorama. I don't think I've ever spelled that up before, but why not now? Technorama Podcast. You Google it. You'll find it. Chuckchat.com is the main site for that.
And since it's the appropriate time of the show, is there anything you would like to hawk or shill, Gary?
No, not at the moment. I'm a man without a nation, so.
You got us, Gary. You got us.
That's right.
He's the podcaster's friend.
Much appreciated. Much appreciated. Thanks for inviting me on, guys. I really liked it.
Oh, happy to have you. Happy to have you. Always great to have you on. And certainly this was, I think, a very good episode to have you on in because you have all the feels on Star Trek VI, which is good. All right. But now it's time to hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, Gary, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt.
With the maroon coat over it.
With the piping and the thing and the metals. Don't do that. Who's been shooting off a phaser in here?
Stiff spuds.